Hello, welcome to the Tuesday night discussion group. We're discussing chapter 7 of Steve Ozenich's Great Pain Deception, Placebo Yo-Yos and Nocebo No-Nos. This is going to be a great discussion tonight, as we've been having one every week. And we're really all excited. Every one of us is, or most of us has been some good talks before we even started here, so we'll lead right into it. I want to make the main disclaimer before we start. I do need to remind everyone that this is a peer support group and none of us are medical or mental health professionals. Now, with that being said, Bruce is the king of the summary. So, Bruce, I'm going to hand it over to you, buddy.
Well, this we're going to be discussing Chapter 7 of Steve Ozenich's Great Pain Deception, as Herbie just said, and it's entitled Placebo Yo-Yos and Nocebo No-Nos. Well, the motto for this chapter that Steve locates at the head of the first paragraph is a quote from Norman Cousins. A rather famous book called The Anatomy of an Illness. And the motto for this chapter is the placebo is proof that there is no real separation between mind and body. So placebos and nocebos are the topic of this chapter, and placebo comes from the Latin verb I will please, and nocebo comes from the Latin verb I will harm. Now, Walt wrote a little synopsis of this chapter, and he gives a very good, Walt Glenview gives a very good definition of what is a placebo. The word comes from the Latin word placebo, meaning I please, and is a simulated or otherwise medically ineffectual treatment for a disease or other medical condition intended to deceive the recipient. Sometimes patients are given a placebo, also called sugar pills treatment, that will have a perceived or actual improvement in a medical condition, a phenomenon commonly called the placebo effect. And a nocebo, as I just said, means I will harm. And you might say that a nocebo can be characterized by negative information that reinforces a condition. For example, when a doctor tells a patient that's suffering from back pain that she will never be able to run again, he's creating a nocebo. Where every time she runs, she will confront be confronted with so much pain that she will avoid it. Or there are all kinds of things that that medical professionals tell people with TMS that set them up for staying oh. Housebound or not getting out and getting on with their life. For example, the idea that you must sit in your chair properly. I've seen diagrams of this on the walls of physical therapy centers where they
And
have
you've
someone
done it
sitting in
too.
a ch sitting in
And
a
you.
chair, looking at their PC it, with eyes straight, level
Yeah.
head. Back straight in a certain posture with their arms at this angle. And the implication is that if you sit any other way in front of the chair, oh, bango, that's why your back pain is going to flare up.
I've seen them have a ruler, actually a ruler from the
Yeah.
back of the neck to the back and if the
Yeah.
ruler touched, then you was straight enough. So go ahead, Bruce.
And there are other things like that you must lift a particular way. So anytime you don't lift exactly like the medical professional has told you, then you're going to start
You're
hurting.
gonna
I
hurt.
know another one that I can speak about from personal experience. I remember they were teaching me in physical therapy how to brush my teeth.
Whoa.
And they were telling me that I had to stand in a certain posture in front of the mirror with my neck bent, my back bent a certain angle, my legs bent.
That's going to make you hurt.
Then I could hold the toothbrush up to my mouth and I would not hurt. And what they were doing was getting the idea through to me, hammered into my head, that if I didn't stand in exactly this posture, then, my back will start to hurt. So,
in other words, you must have been structurally flawed to have to do all this.
To get in this posture, you had to be structurally flawed.
Or structurally pretty good shape to be getting in that type of position.
Yeah, it was like you were going to squat 300 pounds. You got into a posture like that to keep everything tight. And the idea was that you were loose and damaged. And see, there's the nocebo reinforcing the idea that you're damaged and limited.
Yeah, I remember years I never bent at my waist. I always squatted down. I never would bend at my waist, and it was because they told me not to bend at my waist, and I was scared to death. And every time I did bend at my waist, I would hurt every time. And I know it was conditioned, but it was from a placebo. It was from a nocebo, or however you want to say it. The doctor had told me not to do that. And it, hey, man, wow. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, Steve thinks that the main difference between TMS healing is that it is more permanent. The treatment listed below may actually delay healing because they reaffirm in the mind that something is wrong with the body that needs fixing. And he gives a whole list of placebos, I think on page 142, don't so much help the patient as reinforce the idea. They make the patient feel better temporarily.
Yeah, but they keep their mind on structure, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, he lists these. There's chiropractic manipulation, sense of touch, snapping, popping, auditory placebo effect.
That don't tell you it's structural, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that is reinforced in each session that you go to with the chiropractor. And they have a nasty habit of taking an x-ray and then telling you you have these subluxations and that you will soon be paralyzed unless you sign up for a 14-month course for $2,800 right on the dotted line right now. They use that visual advertising with the subluxion. And
you know, I had a chiropractor, Dr. Mary Spencer, and maybe I shouldn't say her name, but she was a good person, and that's the reason I said her name. But every time I went to her, I always felt good. Now, I would feel good for 3 days. And then she had told me it was going to be 3 days. And I think she goes out, good, honest person. I think we got a lot of honest chiropractors out there that really believe in what they're doing. But you know, for 3 days I would be fine, and then on that fourth day I would hurt again. And when I would go back and get adjusted, I would again feel better for 3 days. And this went on for 2 years. Now that was conditioning, though. That was my mind believing that her snapping and popping on me was going to make me better, and that's how powerful the placebo was. I know, because I went on and healed without any of that.
Yeah, I don't know where it is in here, but Steve talks about reinforcement. This list of placebos that he gives includes acupuncture, corticosteroid injections, ESI, knee or back or neck or floor, or RSI surgery. Well, he discusses the role of surgery as one of the most powerful placebos in this chapter. And he's saying how, that was it. He was talking about the ritual associated with therapy, with surgery, as being a highly effective form of placebo. And you get that same ritual with a chiropractor too, and also with an acupuncturist.
That's right.
I guess the unbeliever would say mumbo jumbo. And yet it works temporarily, yeah. Which is an indication that is a placebo cure. Why yeah. you keep having to return again and again. But Steve makes a couple of important salient points about surgery. Let me see if I can find it quickly. He cites a 2002 Baylor College medicine study that reveals how the surgery placebo works as a process. Three groups were created of about 60 people who had osteoarthritis in their knees. Two of the groups, and who doesn't? two of the groups received one of two different types of arthroscopic knee surgery. The third group was given a placebo or sham surgery, incisions on their knees with no actual surgery. The final results after a year were that all three groups reported equal amounts of improvement in pain and function, and the same held true 2 years after surgery.
Didn't the knee group, though, go on to have better results afterwards?
Equal amounts of improvement, all of them. And the designer of the study said that this research indicates that there is an enormous placebo effect for this surgery, but that is the only value in the vast majority of osteoarthritis patients.
Okay.
Anybody else there?
Yeah, who is this?
This is Joan from New Jersey.
Hey, Joan. Joan from Jersey.
Anyone doing else? Good.
Yeah, we've got a lot of people on here.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to know real quick, what are you discussing tonight?
Placebos.
Okay.
Chapter 7.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the...
Tennis Tom here, too. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Tennis Tom. How you doing, buddy?
Cool. I'm doing good.
I'm here.
I know you're going to have a good story to tell about a placebo or two.
Yeah.
Huh?
I will.
Can you all hear me?
And yeah, we can hear you. Who was that?
Good. It's Forrest. Forrest is here too.
Forrest.
Yeah.
All right.
Good deal. Good to have you here, Forrest.
Good to hear everyone else's voice too. Yeah. But I don't want to interrupt. Keep on as you were.
Yeah, the surgeon who performed all three of these procedures for osteoarthritis patients in their knees was named Bruce Mosley. And his conclusion was, this study provides strong evidence that arthroscopic lavage with or without debridement is not better than and appears to be equivalent to a placebo procedure in improving knee pain and self-reported function. Indeed, at some points during follow-up, objective function was significantly worse in the debridement group than in the placebo group because they'd gone in and messed with the knee and actually cut it up. So the placebo group made some patients worse than the placebo group, as it decreased the objective range of function in their knees.
Yes.
And of course, Steve admits that acute injury or physical trauma may need outside correction, like an athletic injury where there's blunt force trauma or the knee is twisted or you're bent back in a traffic accident. But in the large majority of cases, in which knee surgery was performed, there was no difference between not doing a thing and having the knee surgery.
And this was at Baylor College?
Yeah, that was that Baylor study. And the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services went on in a study called Understanding Acute Low Back Pain Problems. This is shifting from knees to backs. The study concluded that 99% of back operations were failures, and that the surgery often created more problems, just like the debridement.
Can you believe that when you hear that 99%? And this is from a college that did a study on this. Something
This is from our friends in the, I think, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Oh, so yeah, it's fire up.
Yeah, it's
can you believe
up.
That? 99% of the back surgeries are a failure. Have you ever seen anybody that did have a good back surgery? I mean, I know I got about eight friends that's had
them. Steve says he's never met anyone who had a good back surgery, but everybody I've ever talked to who had a back surgery was coming back from the back surgery, recovering from the back surgery, being careful after the back surgery, or
and this
was
is supposed
going
to be
back
the world's...
for another surgery.
Yeah, and this is supposed to be one of the great placebos of our time, right, according to John Sarno?
Yeah, that's what Sarno says. That's what Steve says here.
I assume because it holds the pain off for a certain amount of time anyway, correct,
well,
before it comes
Steve
back?
Steve has an interesting aside on the subject of surgery and the placebo it creates. He says the surgery placebo becomes effective in disarming or breaking the focus of any conflict for a short time.
Yeah.
However, placebos do not normally last, and the pain, much like Arnold, will come back. It was merely their belief it had worked from the ritual of the surgery, providing means for them to bail out of their tension-filled arenas and enabling them to momentarily escape their spouse, parent, job, kids, and problems. So it's like a cop-out. It's like time-out, again, like TMS. It's an admission that things have gotten to be too much. So let's time for knee surgery, time for back surgery.
Well, they have the surgery, and then they lay down and take a break and get away from it all for a while, and all of a sudden the tension and stress starts relieving a little, and then they start feeling better. And in reality, there was some TMS healing going on there. But then when they go back out into the world because they haven't went to the root of the cause, they start to hurt again or get back out into the, you know, thick of things.
Yeah, well, he gives a list of more placebos.
I'm sure. Well, I bet we got about 10 of them right here. I'm looking over here to the left, and we have a lot of callers.
Drug,
so I think
the sugar pill. A friend of mine was having heart palpitations when his mother got very sick with breast cancer, and the doctor gave him some placebo pills.
Okay.
That lowered his blood pressure and the
lowered his blood pressure.
Yeah, it did.
See how powerful? Wow.
Yeah, and he lists others: the True Back, the orthopedic traction device. Oh, have I seen these? The copper wrist bracelets.
Oh, yeah, I used to wear one.
So many people with back problems who wear those things religiously.
Yeah.
And, of course, and their ointments, talismans, chondroitin and glucosamine.
That's a supplement.
I know people are popping those all the time, thinking they're doing them a world of good. And, again, I've heard in studies that they're no better than a sugar pill.
Yeah, and I want to hear from Jay or Tennis Tom or Jan or somebody about a placebo.
Have you guys ever heard of a therapy called prolotherapy?
Yes.
Tennis Tom probably has. And
hey, that's where they squirt water into you.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, before I discovered TMS, I went to New Orleans and had a set of injections. They claim you have loose ligaments, you know. And, of course, the loose ligaments let your spine get out of line and so forth and therefore pinch your nerves. So they go in with irritants and inject your ligaments with irritants is supposed to mildly irritate enough to make them heal and scar up and get tighter. That's the theory. Well, I had a set of those injections, and my EMS, I assume, jumped on that issue and made me 10 times worse. It took me 3 months to get back.
Hello?
It's a placebo, but in my case, it worked as a nocebo.
Okay, say that last sentence again. You got disconnected.
Prolotherapy is, well, in theory, well, I told you what it was in theory. I think it is a placebo effect that people are having from it. But in my case, it worked as a nocebo because it did harm to me. Yeah.
It's a two-edged sword then, isn't it? Yeah. It can slice both ways.
Yeah. You know, nothing, it didn't do anything permanent, of course. There's nothing much in those injections except they got some lidocaine and little irritants, 0.9 normal sodium chloride and stuff. It's just not going to do much damage, you know, there's any permanent damage. But I just figured since I had TMS and I didn't have the oxygen in there and it's sitting there, that thing's sitting there waiting for any excuse to flare up on you and do worse. So when they stuck the needles in there, my TMS used that, took advantage of it, and really jumped on me a lot worse just from having that done.
It's awesome
that you cut down on your oxygen.
Massage therapy also has a nocebo effect on me.
So it makes you hurt when you're done?
Yes, it does. So I don't do massage, any kind of stretches. They sent me to physical therapy many years ago before I knew anything about this. Well, you know, physical therapists, the first thing they want to do is stretch you. I don't stretch. If you stretch me, it makes it worse. And if you think about TMS and the fact that those capillaries are suffering for, and the tissues are suffering for oxygen, know that it doesn't want to be stretched. I perceive the TMS situation as being something that's sitting there for me, waiting for anything that happens, anything that, you know, I could sit down wrong or anything. It's waiting for some reason to jump on me, you know, and it just, all these treatments out here I've had for the last 40 years, for me, either did no good or made me worse some way.
But you
the
have
only thing
him.
That did, like Herbie said, was the only placebo I've had out there was through chiropractic. Now, that I did. But the other stuff, besides the prolotherapy, the physical therapy, chiropractic and ultrasound would also give me a placebo effect really well, because ultrasound increases circulation and therefore oxygen there, but it would be like a 2 hour wonder. In two hours, it's right back. Yeah.
Because still not hitting the root cause. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that I get right. Right. Exactly. Not getting to the root cause.
Something that could be right underneath your nose and you're just unaware of it. And
that's
we're
right.
Just, yeah, on top of a lot of other things. Hey, Tennis Tom, what about some placebos you've had?
Oh, man, I've spent, I could buy a state with all the money that I spent on acupuncture. I probably had 200 acupuncture treatments, went to a couple of chiropractors, yeah, it's all very restful while you're there. They put a heat lamp on you, play some nice soft music through some speakers in the ceiling. You're lying there, you ain't going anywhere because you got all these needles in you. And the only negative thought you might have is, what if there's an earthquake? But, yeah.
Well, what were your experiences with acupuncture, Tom? What did you feel with it? Did it relax you? Was that it? Solely?
Well, you don't really feel the needles. I'd say I had maybe 200 sessions, and Rolfing. I had about 90 Rolfing sessions too. That's kind of the opposite.
Tom,
but
is Rolfing anything like Feldenkrais?
Yeah, Rolfing. That's kind of prolotherapy. Yes.
That's okay. The other part of the equation. Rolfing is kind of like a deep tissue massage.
Yeah.
It can leave bruises. It's kind of like doing surgery without getting cut. And you'll never know how deeply you can breathe until some guy's had his finger up your nose nostril halfway to your brain, and how that opens up your breathing passages for about 48 hours.
Wow.
So I kind of enjoyed it, but I'm a masochist by nature, and I still would do it. But massage, I think massages and stuff like that, they're good. I've had, I don't know, hundreds of massages. And I think
there's nothing
okay.
wrong with a massage as long as you're not looking at it as the cure, right? I mean, you're looking at it to relax you and everything. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Agreed. No, I think it's great as long as you go in with that mindset that this is going to be a treat to yourself and some relaxation. Yeah, I think I'm all for massages from that aspect.
That sounds awesome.
There you go.
That sounds awesome. Anybody else want to tell the story of a placebo effect that happened to you from a doctor that might have told you something and you thought it was relieved, but then, say, a month, 2 months later, the pain came back, or come to find out later, you knew that it really wasn't what the doctor said. It wasn't the cure the doctor said it was.
I did.
Anybody else? Oh, is this Jan?
Yeah, this is Joan.
Oh, Joan. Okay, Joan from Jersey. Okay, Joan.
I had, they thought it was trigeminal neuralgia, which is the nerves in your face. So they did a surgery where they go behind your ear through the skull to relieve some kind of pressure on an artery or nerve. So I'm a former Sorno patient also. I had back pain. I was cured of that. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Ira Rochbaum now. He's kind of taking Sorno's place.
Yes, we are.
Yes, so after I had the surgery 3 years ago, he thought it was quite odd that I didn't get the placebo effect because I still have pain. And trigeminal neuralgia, Sarno says, is one of the, one of the ailments of TMS patients, but now I have 24/7 pain. So I don't know if anyone could answer that.
Okay, so you've done seen Sarno, you're doing a protocol, and you're having 24-hour pain?
Agony.
Okay, and could you say that word again? That what they said you had?
Trigeminal neuralgia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, does anybody know about that on the phone here?
Irritation of a cranial nerve. Yes. And it can be extremely painful.
My sister.
It would be kind of like occipital neuralgia, even migraine headaches. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, this is Mouse Mom. Joan, my sister has that. She's going to a conference actually Thursday in California all about that.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, because she had her surgery 5 years ago, same as you, and her pain started back up again this summer really bad.
Right.
Talk to her about TMS.
Oh, right.
But
she just
does not believe it. But she's given me a lot of stuff to read on it, so I'm still stuck if it is a TMS thing or I'm not sure yet.
There's another.
I'm not truly convinced it is all TMS yet either. I hate to say that.
Is this Mouse Mom?
It's okay.
This is Mouse Mom. Yep, my sister suffers badly from that.
So you're still wondering too, right? Is that what you just said?
I still wonder for my sister because she just is in agony. You know, the only way I can relate is the bad back pain I have. You know, but it's in her face, and she's had that surgery, the same surgery as Joan. And she's going to go to this big conference, which I think is wonderful. She's going to this conference because it's like this support group for TMS. She's going to meet a lot of other people that are dealing with the same issue, you know.
If I can interject, from Steve-O's book on page 355 of his appendix, trigeminal neuralgia, characterized by pain in the facial area, including teeth, jaw, nose, forehead, etc. It causes electric or lightning-like shocks when the face is touched during activities such as brushing teeth, eating, sleeping, or putting on makeup, etc. Like many itises or alges, this is frequently misdiagnosed when it is simply TMS. It normally forms later in life, and once again, more frequently in females. So that's what Steve-O says about it.
If that's
of any help to anybody.
Yeah, that was great, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've tried to point it out to her, but, you know, when you, it's hard to for her to accept.
Absolutely.
So, Joan...
What note is that when you're talking about trigeminal neuralgia, Dr. Sarno said in some of his later books, he renamed it from tension myositis syndrome to tension myoneural syndrome, where the neural is indicating that the affected tissue, rather than being muscle, can also be nerve tissue. So your brain, instead of shutting off oxygen or blood flow to muscles, can shut off blood flow to the trigeminal nerve. So it fits in. So, or just like it can shut off blood flow to the sciatic nerve, and that's what leads to sciatica. Or in my case, this is Forrest, by the way. When I type, sometimes I, like once every year or two, I get numbness and tingling in the area affected by the ulnar nerve. That's the pinky and the outer aspect of the ring finger. And I totally treat it like TMS. I say, I know this is just TMS. I know that, I'm totally fine, and I keep typing, and I'm just fine.
That's great.
It's Joan again. I think somebody could help me maybe understand this, since I've healed myself of back pain, terrible sciatic pain for about 6 years.
You're seeing Dr. Rashbaum presently?
Not now. There's a doctor in New Jersey that treats TMS.
Gawatz? Dr. Gawatz?
Yes.
Well, is he not helping you?
Well, he said to me last week that I don't want to get rid of this pain.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about what he told you? Do you think he's wrong in that, or did you feel insulted by what he said to you, or what do you feel about what he told you?
No, it was okay. I mean, I accepted what he said, but if I, I guess I'm trying to. No, I don't want this pain. Absolutely not. But I think in my mind...
Consciously you don't. Yeah.
No, consciously I don't. But I don't know if I'm trying to figure this out of the underlying whatever.
Your subconscious doesn't want to let go of it if it's TMS. And as Dr. Sarno said in his later works, that TMS is a protector, not a punisher, as Freud postulated. So if it's protecting you, then your subconscious is using it as a defense mechanism for pain, because it feels you need to be protected by using the pain as a distraction.
It's a hobby horse, something you can ride. Yeah.
Has anyone gone through any kind of TMS therapy with a therapist, and did that help? Anyone?
Yeah, I have. I saw Dr. Dubin in down there in Beverly Hills, and it helped greatly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know Veronica on the forum. She did Skyping with a TMS therapist and found it very helpful. I just learned a lot from her. I think about self-compassion. I think self-compassion was her big thing. I think, but then, of course, I had another person who went to the same therapist and didn't find it helpful. And I guess that's consistent with what the research says about therapists. That a lot of it is about your compatibility with the individual therapist.
Right.
And, yeah. that you want to find, and I think GWAS works with a number of therapists. So the good thing with working with GWAS is that if you find one that you don't like and you don't feel compatible, you can always switch to another one.
Right. Thank
but
you.
I've heard so
did Dr. GWAS recommend that you see a therapist?
Yeah, I did. I had 3 sessions, and real quick, I'm a full-time realtor, and I had missed my session because I had to be somewhere, 2 appointments that were.
Okay.
And anyway, so she kind of said, you know, how could I miss her session? And I took it as, you know, like some therapists, I think, are in it for the money.
Well, you know, I've heard that, but, you know, anyone who's in TMS therapy, I believe, there's very few people on the planet who are interested in TMS, and most doctors, it's a very small part of their practice because most of the patients don't want to hear it. So when you find a professional, whether it's a physician or a psychotherapist who practices TMS, that is very rare, and I've heard that before. They're in it for the money. Well, you know, they got to pay their rent too. They charge the same amount whether they give you TMS therapy or some other kind. And, you know, it just doesn't sound like you want to hear it, you know, Joan?
Yeah, well, you know, does the severity of the pain mean anything?
I don't think it does so much. Some people will say that the more severe the pain is, the more odious or bad you feel about the repressed feelings. That could be the case.
I think the closer I was to the original trauma that precipitated the catastrophic back pain, the worse the pain was. It seems like time is a healer.
Are you better?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a relapse 5 years ago, but I've been coming back and doing it right this time, I think. Not relying on PT.
Are you constantly believing, Joan, that it's going to get better? Are you constantly believing? Are you constantly thinking in your mind that it's going to get better, even though you're in pain, even though you're hurting, even though you know it doesn't feel good, even though you know you still got to go forth with this pain? Are you constantly thinking that it's going to get better? Do you speak like it's going to get better?
No, I think like I'm giving up now.
Yeah, you got to grab back a hold, hon. You got to grab back a hold. Don't give up. How long do you say this has been going on again?
8 years. Not this bad. It wakes me up at night. I can't.
So you've had relief with the doctors, right? With the TMS doctors?
Yes.
Okay. So you know that, you know, what they have taught you does help, correct? To a certain.
Well, that's the whole thing. I don't see any, if we had a pain scale, any kind of relief during the day of very, very little. It's like this thing is screaming at me. That's what worries me.
And it's hard for me to even
concentrate.
Yeah.
Has Dr. Gawat prescribed any pain medication for you?
No.
No.
Pain medication never worked.
But you've tried it, and it hasn't worked.
No.
Okay. Well, I take some Tylenol. I take different things. So, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, is it TMS? Is it not TMS? Did Dr. Gawat think it was TMS?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And do I deep down? I do. It's just that I don't know how to start to think differently and try to get myself better.
That's what the therapist is for. I mean, that's the therapist's job.
Right.
Oh, but you took 3 sessions and you didn't, you know, you didn't like this therapist. So I went to a therapist. It wasn't a TMS therapist, but I disliked the experience so much, and I had such a bad rapport with them. I said, I got to get better because I can't stand going to this guy, and I made myself get better. You know, out of a clinical depression, I said, I got to get better because I can't stand coming to this meeting. Now, you can find a therapist who's going to, you know, be nice and not like me and say, yeah, fine, and just, you know, be gentle with you, which is great, and that's what I wish I would have had. But if you don't have a rapport with this therapist, maybe try another one. Ask Dr. Gawatz, can you refer me to a different therapist where maybe we have a better rapport?
Right.
Well, and I think Dr. Gloss really is your great resource for this because he knows the therapist and he knows their methodology. I remember talking to another woman. She lived in New York who was seeing a therapist who I know was very good, but was just having a really rough time and the topic of money came up. And
right.
It's tough because different people have different methodologies, and sometimes they will work with the relationship. They'll sometimes they'll even bring stuff up within the relationship, but that's kind of between the therapist and you. And so the doctor knows. We'll be able to interpret that for you much better, I think.
Thanks.
Give you better. Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, Joan, if you feel that it could be TMS, I would just keep going back and camp out at the doctors and the therapist. Till they fix it, if you feel that that it may be. That's their job. That's what they're there for. And keep going back until it's fixed, you know?
Okay.
Joan, do you feel that...
That hope thing is a tough one, though, right? Like, coming up with that hope, that's... I think a lot of us struggle with that. Watching the time go by, and there's no doubt that the pain really is tough, but I think Herbie's advice is great when he says... No, what was it that you said? You said, like, you have to get that hope. You have to somehow find a way to find that hope. What did you say, Herbie?
Yeah, you got to keep on believing every day, even if you're feeling the pain, even if you're feeling the hurts, you got to keep on believing every day that this could be the day, you know, that it lets up. And I'm going to do everything I can do. I'm going to do all the steps. I'm going to do the mindfulness. I'm going to try to seek out, you know, what it might be right underneath my nose that's bothering me. I'm going to keep looking. And until I find, you know, the cure.
Right,
but
do you really need, like with my back, that pain, I don't know, the day it went away.
Uh-huh.
Do you really have to find that issue?
You don't have to find the main issue. Just keep hitting around the issues, and eventually you'll start, you know, it's kind of like an octopus with all the legs down, and all the legs is just more emotions, bad emotions coming off this one bad emotion. If you can start hitting at some of these other lesser emotions that's, you know, bothering you that could be coming from the main thing, then you'll start knocking down the dominoes, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah,
Joan,
do not have to find the issue. Dr. Sarno says this repeatedly in his books. You do not have to find the issue. That's just going to make you more and more bummed out. You just have to believe the TMS knowledge that it's benign and that it's TMS, and don't worry about finding it. You can spend the rest of your life and you'll never find it.
Right,
no, the answer to your question is that you do not have to do psychoarchaeology, I think, as Steve-O or others have put it. Psychoarchaeology, go there and keep digging and digging. No, you don't have to do that. Just go do and do and do. Quit digging
all
and
right.
Start doing. Yeah.
Yes, more
right,
important,
so with,
start living life.
With,
yeah.
With that being said, this therapist said to me, were you ever in therapy before? And I said, yes. And I told her how long, you know, whether it was 9 months. She said, well, that's not a long time. So... if we really don't have to find that underlying issue, where does the therapy come? Where is the therapy helpful? If I know my emotions are causing this, I know it. Okay, where does the therapy come in to help me?
As you speak, she'll be able to understand emotional issues that you'll even have aha moments as you speak and as you talk. Our mouth often
right.
says things our mind don't want to hear. You will eventually speak in, to a therapist, journaling a lot or whatever, thinking a lot about what you've been going through in life in the present moment. you will eventually run across things that will give you those aha moments and say, oh, that was one of the, you know, repressions right. that I needed to know about. I've done that and actually had pain lighten while I was actually thinking about it in the now. I like the way Steve puts it when he says, often when people come to him and talk to him about healing and they'll say, well, should we go back to the childhood? And Steve says, no, that's where all the problems are. We need to start right on the present. And I like the way he put that. And that's the way I think we all need to do. We need to start right now in the present and start paying attention. What are we doing right now that could be causing, you know, this tension, this stress, this strain in our bodies? For one instant, myself, I wasn't getting out and living life. I wasn't having fun no more. There wasn't nothing that was fun in my life anymore. I was taking life too serious. I was the sergeant in command, so to say. So. And I had a lot that I didn't know that I found out later on that I was doing to my own self through my own thinking. So there's a lot of things you have to put together, but at the same time, living in now, living in the present moment, and thinking in that order that Dr. Sarno talks about, that Steve-O talks about in his book, that Tennis Tom talks about, Forrest, Bruce, all of us talk about, you keep getting these notches, you keep getting these little learning lessons, and eventually you catch it, you know? Learn as much as you can. Knowledge is the penicillin, so learn as much as you can. I don't care if it's been 20 years, right, Tom? Keep learning, you know?
Yeah. Herbie, Eric, Joan, something you said that I wasn't crazy about, that your therapist said that it wasn't long enough. Donald, when I saw Don Dubin, he said the most sessions he ever had to do to inform someone about TMS was 12. So, you know, the job of the TMS therapist, I believe, generally, is to help you, like we're doing now, understand the TMS fundamentals. Now, it's rare, according to Dr. Sarno, that anyone needs, you know, deep, long-term psychotherapy. You know, that's someone who really is deeply damaged. Now, is there something in your past, you had nine months of therapy before, that you feel is, you've been so damaged by, traumatized by something?
Yeah, my mother's death, probably that's when it started.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but that's a normal thing that happens to almost all of us. That are, you know, that if it was your child's death, that's not normal. But parents dying, we all go through that, and that is a normal trauma on the Rahe scale. Unless you were there and you saw her run over by a train. But, you know, I'm not trying to trivialize this at all. But I don't think, offhand, I'm a therapist, that should be so traumatic that you need years of psychoarchaeology, as that therapist inferred. I think maybe you need to see a different, go to Dr. Gawatz and say, I'm not hitting it off with this therapist. Can you recommend another one until you find one that you feel, you know, is helpful? And because if you feel the therapist is picking your wallet, that's not a very good relationship.
Yeah. Well, actually, what Dr. Gawatz said is that the issue that I think it is may not be.
I think that's the case when it is for a lot of times. I think that's what's so hard with therapy, is it's unconscious. It's repressed. So we may have some ideas about what it might be, but we might be absolutely, completely wrong about that. And, you know, we may try to explore it, but we may go in absolutely the wrong direction. And so when I've had interactions with the Freudian therapists that Dr. Sarno refers to, I think that they take a very gentle approach so that people can, at their own speed, discover what it is that they're hiding from themselves. I guess I'll throw a contrasting view in here, and I think this can be difficult because for people when they're learning about TMS and doing TMS scaling, because you can get lots of different opinions from different people. Whenever I'm stuck, I like to go back to Dr. Sarno's own treatment protocol, what he does with his patients. And people come in and knowledge is the penicillin, and he does this psychoeducational approach. But then for a certain proportion of patients, he sends them to psychoanalysts, and, if you don't have a psychoanalyst, another similar approach would be psychodynamic.
Well, far as, you know, when I did see Sarno, he wasn't sure himself whether this was TMS.
Oh, really? Okay.
I had the back pain and this at the same time, where Dr. Guatz feels that this is TMS. So that's a struggle after having a failed operation.
That's a challenge, yeah. So you talked to Dr. Sarno, and he wasn't sure that the trigeminal neuralgia was TMS?
At that time. That's probably 7 years ago.
I see. And now you talk to Dr. Guaz, and Dr. Guaz is sure. Now you do
Rushbaum wasn't sure either. He said mainly we deal with back pain, which I found quite confusing after I've read Sarno's books and all the other symptoms. And then when I met Dr. Guaz, I mean, he's convinced it is, so.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for all your support and listening to me tonight.
Well,
Steve-O is doing consultations. He wrote the book. I think his book is the textbook of TMS. What I read you earlier is in the appendix of his book. He believes trigemental or whatever is TMS. Try calling him, contacting him, or the other good person I think would be Nicole Sachs in New Hampshire. Maybe contact her, one of those two, and if you want to do some consults with, I think, two people who are very reputable and know TMS inside and out.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, welcome.
Steve, in this chapter, seems to imply that we should tap into the placebo effect in order to affect our healing. He asked the question on page 141, so is TMS healing a placebo effect? Yes, if the definition of a placebo is predicated solely on your belief, the central mechanism of all healing. I do, though, differentiate between TMS healing, finding the truth about yourself, and healing by being fooled through rituals, all of those items listed below, the acupuncture, the massage, the surgeries, they may ease the pain of any sufferer, and so I cannot dismiss their effectiveness. But as far as the real healing is concerned, The main difference between that TMS healing is more permanent, and the treatments listed below that we were going over may actually delay healing because they reaffirm in the mind that something is wrong with the body that needs fixing. They're a way of bypassing the cause of the problem, which is really your family history, your personality, and your present circumstances. Yeah, so Steve thinks we should tap into the placebo effect. I think belief is the key here. Placebo is based on a faith, and TMS healing is based on a faith, too, that's based on knowledge. And that's where Dr. Sarno differentiates between mere placebo cures, and so does Steve, and genuine TMS healing. And I thought I should just introduce that at the end here, since that's the central subject of the chapter, and we've been going off and about on placebos and nocebos. But that's the gist of what Steve is saying. And he's talking about, Norman Cousins, too, who just with a cheerful attitude was able to overcome his rheumatoid arthritis by telling jokes and whimsical stories and changing his personality. Not all of this torturous soul searching in therapy looking for whatever it was that happened to you once. It's a matter of doing it now, is what Steve seems to be saying here.
Right, now, yep.
Yeah, he brings it back to the present, doesn't he, in this chapter? Bringing it all back home, like Bob Dylan says.
Yeah, I think TMS calls out to wake us up and says, hey, you know, we need to start getting on with life again. Or it might be calling out to say, you know, you're being too rough on yourself. Or it wants you to wake up to something that you're unaware of. And when we say unaware, it's just, you know, everybody else might be seeing it around you, but you don't see it. And, you know, it's one of those things. You might need to go out and dance somewhere. You might need to go out and play with the kids and you know, watch the birds fly through the air at the park.
That's true.
Yeah.
I just think as I've gotten better, I notice that I'm interacting with other people socially. I'm becoming more social without being self-conscious about it. It's just happening.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
some kind
of change going on.
Great.
Something deeper.
Mm-hmm. Jan?
Which brings it back to Steve and to cordification and our need to connect with people.
Yes, that's awesome.
That's at the center of Steve's
relationship
thinking. Yeah, about TMS healing is transcordification. You could write a whole book about this book, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he said if you was to sum the whole book up, it would be relationship. You know, with life or relationship with somebody or relationship in general, you know, with life. So, it's pretty awesome what TMS can teach you. I think it's pulling you back because it's something wanting you to open your eyes and realize, you know, it's time to, you know, become a kid again or live life again or get this nagging husband off your back. I don't know. Something in those areas.
Getting back to this centrality of belief in TMS healing, what's at the center of it? Steve says at the end of this chapter, people who fully believe in TMS fully heal. Those who believe in it slightly but still have residual doubt heal a little. Those who don't believe at all don't heal. They have freely created their own realities based upon their belief. And that's why placebos work, too. You believe in the ritual. But this is a more thorough or more effective form of healing because you've got real knowledge. I think that's what Sarna would say. Knowledge is the inoculation that cures you.
And yes, if I can add from Steve-O's chapter here, read some. Dr. Sarna points out that the fact that so many thousands of people heal through reading his books is proof that the TMS process is not a placebo. There's no physical interjection or personal interaction of any kind in the healing process. By reading his book, so it's not only mere belief that heals people from chronic pain, it's also an understanding of the process. When the physician explains to the sufferer exactly what is occurring, he is in essence taking away any placebo effect. I believe Dr. Sarna would agree that this was one of his most amazing findings regarding TMS. In explaining how the pain process works, his patients began to heal.
Yeah, that's synthesis.
Awesome.
Synthetic knowledge.
You know, with TMS healing, you pretty much get it, you understand it, and you heal up. With the placebo healing, when it does come back, you don't understand how to get it fixed again unless you go back to the doctor. And, you know, there's a big difference there. You've got this knowledge therapy that can help you if you do, you know, have an ache or a pain again or something was to come back on you through a symptom imperative where the pain moves through your body. You can understand that maybe I'm not doing enough mindfulness. Maybe I'm not, you know, getting out and enjoying life enough. Maybe I'm not smiling enough. Maybe I'm not doing something like I was doing a year ago when I was doing a lot better. So you can always, you know, look back at what helped you. You got the twos, you got the understanding, and you can always go back and get yourself fixed up again. With a placebo, you have to go back to the doctor and hope he's got the, you know, the right talk, the right, you know, pill and so forth, right?
Yeah, I know a guy who went to a chiropractor for years and years. He was always doing something on the job. A perfectionist, an overachiever, he would do something on the job. He's a construction worker, and then he'd have to go see the chiropractor. And he developed a relationship with this one chiropractor where he went again and again and again. He was always going back, and he was fixed for a while. And then he'd do it like a junkie, like a drug addict. And finally, the chiropractor told him after several years, I can't do any more for you, so I'm going to give you a script for an MRI. So he went down and got the MRI, and lo and behold, of course, bulging discs, herniated discs, too far gone for fixing. So he went to the back surgeon. Then he had the operation, I guess, like reduction in the bulge or whatever they do in there. And then I saw him a couple months later. And I said, oh, you had the operation, now you're okay? And he said, yeah, I'm okay, but I'm going back to the chiropractor. I said, well, you're still going back to the chiropractor. If this operation was such a success, why are you doing this again? In other words, yeah. All of it was placebo the whole time. And now he was reenacting it again because he liked the chiropractor personally. They had a rapport. This was like what he did every week. And he gave him a discount because he was such a frequent user.
Wow.
But you could see how that placebo effect, placebo, ice had him do a cement job on my front yard, and he underestimated it because he couldn't charge me too much. If he charged me $200 more, then he would have plenty of leeway, and I wouldn't have cared. But I come in one night, and it's dark, and there are a bunch of lights on, and he's down at the base of my garage messing around with these running boards that he's installing, these kind of risers for a car. And he's so severely underestimated the time involved that he's down there at night. And, of course, he threw his back out that week, and he was
chiro
again.
There he is. Yeah. GMS alert.
GMS
alert.
Took advantage
of that. But when you see this in other people and you read about it here, you see how it really works around you in the world. It's happening all the time.
Yes.
Let me tell you one thing, though, in the placebo. This is Jan. Sometimes going to back to the chiropractor or back to – sometimes it's just a person's personality and energy that makes me feel better. And it may not. And it may be just having somebody touch me.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I need that.
If these
just a human interaction,
relationship,
exactly, and you know, I think there's nothing wrong with that if you're not, you know, breaking the bank or believing that it's something else. But I think that is one of the best placebos. It's just
agreed. But
you might as well get someone you enjoy.
Well, I believe it's actually healing. I believe it's actually healing when you're around somebody that you enjoy being around. They're good people. They're knowledgeable people. They understand you, you know, and it's relationship. Basically, to sum up Steve's book, here's relationship, and you actually can speak to somebody that understands you. And when you do that, you're letting off a lot of pressure off your body, tension, stress. So, you know, it is healing.
Yeah, because sometimes I think it gets painful to never be understood, you know, or have someone get you.
Yeah.
Not just your pain, but who you are or whatever. And I'm hearing myself echo every time I speak. I'm hearing echoes from other people, too. So,
yeah,
what to do about that?
Yeah. Steve mentions in his book that it's the effect or the person, the confidence, the ritual that the person gives, that is it. You're right. Do you have to spend $150, $200 to get that? Why not just find a friend you can talk to instead of a paid-for friend?
Well, that was the point that it's Joan again that I was trying to make. But Dr. Guad said that I don't want to go to therapy. And that's not the issue.
Okay, so you don't want to go to therapy?
No, I'm just saying I would go to therapy if I had thought that this TMS therapist, I just didn't get a good feeling. So he,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well,
feels
and
that
I
don't.
There was no relationship. There was no friendship there.
Right.
No understanding.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's Jungian or Freudian or Reichian or behavioralist or what the therapist's particular area of expertise is and therapeutic technique. It's the relationship between the patient and the therapist. That's what they all say. Find somebody you get along with.
Yeah.
Yes, so important. Tennis, Tom, you want to end?
Do I want to end? No, let's keep it going.
Go ahead, Tennis, Tom. Tell us some more of that wisdom. I know you've been wanting to say something.
I hope I don't come across as mean-spirited or abrupt or meanie, but I realize, I got like 5 minutes to try to help someone here. I'm trying to be helpful. Anyone who wants, free to call me. You can PM me through the TMS site, and I'll give you my phone number, and we can talk as long as you like. I'm just being emphatic, I think, because that's my style, and I don't push your foot around because there's no time for that. Yeah.
I don't know how to communicate. Like, I'm on the forum, but I don't know. You're saying through the forum?
Joan, if you send me an email, forest@tmswiki.org, I'll put you in touch with
Tom. Oh, that was you, Forrest?
No, but I can put you in touch with Tom.
Okay, guys, you there?
We're back.
A couple people are hanging up. It's getting close to the end of our broadcast.
Okay.
I'm here. I think we just had some dead air. We had dead air.
It seems like the hour isn't long enough with some of these discussions we talk about. Doesn't seem like we can ever get in enough
Well, we did cover the basic outline of Steve's chapter because it's nice and short. I think we touched all the bases.
Okay.
Do you feel, Herbie, like more than an hour would be better?
We'll talk about it right after the show because, like, tonight, to keep going would run us over. A little bit better. This is what I want to say, Forrest. If anybody else has got a question or anything right now, I've got everybody unmuted. If anybody wants to ask a question, we got Tennis Tom on here, we got Forrest on here, we got Bruce on here, then go ahead and ask now, and let's go ahead and get it out. Is that okay, guys?
Sure, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
I have a question. This is Mouse Mom.
Okay, Mouse Mom.
And I don't know if you remember last week I talked about my steroid injections.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And I'm due to have one this Thursday. Had an MRI yesterday, meeting with a neurosurgeon tomorrow. So I've been very interested in listening to what everybody has to say. I'm still very indecisive of what to do because like today has been a really painful day. So I'm any advice?
Well, one of the
did you say steroid injection?
Yep, a lumbar steroid injection. It'll depend on what my MRI says tomorrow, where it would be at, but it's usually the, you know, the lumbar area, ESI.
Okay, so you're asking, should you go ahead and have it or not have it?
Yeah, this would be my 8th or 9th shot in 10 years if I have it. So I've had them before.
And has it been any good before?
Yeah, they've helped in the past. I can't say that they haven't. It's been 2 years since my last one. But I just know how bad they are for you. But at the same time, I'm looking for some relief.
Well, I tell you what, if Steve-O was here tonight at this board, he would tell you, this is what he'd say, steroid injections are placebo. And that's his chapter that we're reading. I've had a couple in my hip. I had, I think, 1 or maybe 48 hours of a little bit of relief, and then it went away. It didn't do me any good. Then I had Synvisc, didn't do me any good, and then I had Suparts, didn't do me any good. So, if SIBO was here, he would say epidurals don't do any good, steroid injections, and they are controversial. I've heard where it's not good to have them repeatedly, then I've heard where it doesn't matter, so I don't know which is right. But
Zephyrides have a post on how it was no different than saline water?
That was injection.
I don't know, but
that's what I was going to bring up.
I read that article from him.
Don't that make you wonder, Mouse Mom?
You know, I'm just to that. I'm exhausted. I'm totally and utterly exhausted.
Yeah.
And I know they've helped me in the past. And I just, I'm tired. I'm just physically tired. And I've been doing the TMS work, and nothing is really giving. And that's been my one help in the past. It has helped. And like I said, I've held off for 2 years. It's not that I jump on everything. I don't go out and try everything. I'm not punching a lot of Advil. I don't take I don't hardly take anything. So I'm not one of those people that rush off to medication to solve every problem in my life. But I'm just desperate. I don't know what else to do right now because I'm.
Let me say, instead of a steroid injection, why didn't you take a couple of Tylenol? I think that might be less. Dr. Sarno has never told people to suffer in silence. He prescribes short-term use of painkillers, and instead of a steroid injection, which to me is more invasive, why not take a couple of Tylenols?
I do take those. They just haven't. They just don't. You know, they don't do much for me. It's like candy anymore.
Okay. All right. I got it. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. It's like
it's a personal decision. It's something you're going to have to make. I mean, we don't know your specifics, and you know, we can share our experience and our beliefs, but we're certainly not medical professionals. What does your doctor say?
Which one?
Okay. There you go. Yeah. Do they say that it's medically necessary to take it? Like, do they say that you could hurt yourself by not getting the injection?
No. And my pain doctor was very honest with me. He said, of course your pain doctor is going to say, I'll give you the injection and you can just hit it hard and, try to get back to your life, Or you can be real conservative, he said, and just, he's been very, understanding of what I want to do because he knows how indecisive I have been with it. My general does not want me to have one at all. And we'll see what the neurosurgeon says tomorrow.
Well, 10 years of that, Mouse Mom, don't you think that that's a heck of a lot of conditioning surrounding
it?
Ritual that surrounds it. I mean, what do they talk about? Recidivism? It sounds like the same pattern that you get in chiropractic or acupuncture or deep tissue massage. It's like once you bought into it, then you're going to roll. You're going to roll with it.
The conditioning is something else. I still have a small few issues with conditionings. they seem like they're the last things to leave sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually start to get better and the pain will start lessening. But then, you know, you go and move a certain way or something, and all of a sudden you get stiff. And you're like, oh, man, the conditioning's still there. Even though I know what's going on, the conditioning's still there. So the conditioning is a powerful, powerful
thing. Can I say something?
Go ahead, Jay.
Mouse Mom, last week I told you to consider the fact that those steroid injections can deteriorate your joints. You're not supposed to have over three or four of those things. I wanted you to do some research on that, because a steroid will degenerate your joints, especially hip joints, but this may be in your spine, but it'll do that too. It'll do it there as well. And the steroid is an anti-inflammatory. And, you know, I mean, what you said, Sarno says you don't have any inflammation to start with. So the good you're probably getting out of this is the lidocaine, because that's what it usually is, a mixture of lidocaine and steroids.
Right.
And that's why it's going to help you for a couple of weeks, and then it's going to go back away, and you get that placebo effect. You know, what I've gotten out of the meeting tonight is the fact that we have to understand that we have TMS and nothing else, and that physical activity is not going to harm us, not going to hurt us, and that we have to get back to full physical activity, and like Herbie says, living our life. And detaching from the pain. In other words, like it's two parts of us. We're going to do what we're going to do, and the pain's got to do whatever it wants to do, and not give it any power to affect our lives. And we go on living our lives regardless of what it does and take the power away from it. It'll probably go away.
And we feed it power through worrying, through stressing, through having tension over these decisions like this alone. It can be generating the pain. Just this decision alone, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure.
And buying into rituals that perpetuate the symptoms, too.
I had had three of those injections, I would not have another. That's what I would personally not do because of what I do know about steroids. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I know they're not good for you. It's just probably been the only thing it's probably years of the conditioning. And I know it's right. I just am so, I'm only in my 30s trying to keep up with three boys. You know,
you don't need deterioration.
But you just get to that point where I just want to feel good again.
Have you had a vacation or something to get away from the boys? Maybe for a day or two, just to see how things go when you get out, maybe with your girlfriends or somebody to just go and walk in the park.
I have, and I don't do well. Because I'm so just conditioned right now. I'm so in fear that something's going to happen.
You still got your mind back at home when you're doing it?
I've noticed several times when you've spoken, Mouse Mom, that the first thing you refer to is having to take care of the boys. And don't you think that's probably a big source of the stress?
I think being good and being perfect.
Being the perfect mother, taking care of these kids. Because I think about my aunt, she just was so selfish about herself, she couldn't care less about her kid. You know, she didn't have that problem. She never brought up child care.
I want to hear what she says here.
I agree. I think, you know, I love listening to everybody on Tuesday nights, but I can honestly say, you know, there's only been a few of us women on here that I think they're Dr. maybe it's Shubin or somebody related to this, that women suffer more from, you know, chronic pain due to that we are really wired different in our brains. It's really, we have more, I don't know if it's a white matter or something, we are wired differently than men. You know, I think, and it's not a knock on men, I think men can get the TMS, know it, get it, and move on with life a lot of times. I think women struggle with this a little bit more than men do.
Is that like 90%, Bruce? Ain't that right? Like 90% of the TMS patients is women? Ain't that right, Bruce? Ain't that what we studied?
I think that's fibromyalgia.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
Tom.
Eyebrows,
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
And yeah. And you can just, you can look on the sites that more success stories are men, you know, from healing. Maybe women just don't post them. I'm not sure, but, you know, maybe it just takes us longer. We're more empathetic.
Not from, but see, that once again is giving a physical excuse to have the pain. It's taking away from the emotional aspect of it, which is TMS, and saying, I am physically, as a woman, I am physically more susceptible to this. And that's giving it the physical thing, which is the wrong direction for TMS.
I think Tom just hit it right on the head.
Emotionally more susceptible, though? I mean, in the sense that if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like you're saying that because you're wired differently, you feel more of a sense of responsibility, more of a sense of obligation and perfectionism and worry, all these things which feed into the TMS personality. Did I get that right, or what were you saying?
Yeah, that's what she said. I don't know if anybody's familiar with like Dr. Amen, you know, that does like the Amen clinics and stuff. You know, he's proven that female brains are totally different than male brains. And
I knew there was something different about my wife. I knew there was something different.
I know, right?
Yeah.
We'll ask her about that.
Yeah.
Well, I explain all the TMS stuff to my husband. He's like, oh, yeah, I get it. That's real easy. And I'm like, well, how do you get it so quickly? And it's taken me a lot to, you know, to accept or sink in or whatever. And he's like, you just get it. That's what it is.
So regarding the three kids. So
yes.
Where does your husband fit into helping you with the three kids? Because you're saying the stress is coming because you're a mom and you got three kids to take care of. So is are you angry with your husband subconsciously that he isn't helping you with the three kids and you're bearing more of the burden?
No. My husband's a godsend. My husband is, like, when he walks in the door, it's like having a second mom walk in the door. My husband is phenomenal. So that's one thing, that he has just been my rock. He, like I said, understands the TMS, gets it, you know, helps tremendously with the boys. But, you know, I definitely fit the TMS personality.
So you're still,
I just think, what's that?
So you're still having an issue on basically just getting it 100%, believing 100% that it's TMS, right?
Yeah.
Right, Mouse?
Because it's just, because it's constant. Like, you know, like just sitting here right now, my back pain increases, you know, and, you know, you just, when you have constant pain, you just, it's hard. It's tough.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's tough when you just got constant pain, you're not sleeping at night, you roll over. You know, it's just constant. When it's constant, it's hard to accept anything at 100%.
Yes.
You know, I tried to go grocery shopping the other day and had to almost go throw up in the grocery store because the pain got so bad. You know, it's hard.
Okay. Let me ask you as well. What if you, instead of a steroid injection for the pain, what if you had a good shot of a high-grade tequila like Patron? Yeah, do you have I don't want to turn you into an alcoholic, but I had this
I enjoy drinking.
Okay. Like, how about two good shots of tequila, you know, when you feel the pain in the evening before you maybe go to bed? Do you think that might help you, you know, sleep a little better and take the edge off your pain?
No.
I would recommend Patron. It's got a nice bottle in it. It works for me.
Silver Patron is the best.
There you go. Maybe try that instead of a steroid injection. It may be less invasive in the long run.
Well, I have to honestly tell you, I mean, maybe this has been experienced too, though, that, you know, I don't mind a drink or two, but I've noticed myself that, you know, you could be 3-4 beers in and going, oh, you know, you start to forget about it, and then I realize, like, oh, I don't want to turn into an alcoholic. To know
beer.
Me, you know.
Beer. Yeah. Beer.
Yeah. So,
I don't think you don't sound like someone's going to turn into an alcoholic, but, you know, I would try a couple of maybe a couple of beer, two or three beers. And if it's going to be a case or a six pack, that's something else. But two or three to two, too, you know. I would approve.
Well, maybe that's a way of saying that you know, it is something we don't necessarily have the answers here, and TMS healing is hard, and it's a process. You know, you're going to go in and meet with your doctors tomorrow and make some sort of choice, and whatever choice you make, we will support that.
Yeah, I understand that, and I do. I totally understand. If I get it, I'm still in the TMS, but, you know, you just always feel like, oh, you got something, you understand it, and I'm still, you feel like a failure if you get the shot.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like.
No,
you sound
very strong to me. You know, you sound like a very strong person. I think you're underestimating your strength.
Yeah, because it takes a lot just to get on here and speak, you know, and speak up about what you're talking about, and you're speaking it right off. You're not holding back, Mouse Mom, and that's a super good thing. You know, don't hold back. Say what's on your mind, you know, and that's what you're doing. And that's showing how strong you are, you know?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I totally, well, I feel like I get so frustrated because you feel like you get it. I get it, but I don't get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But we've all been there.
Yeah, it does.
That's one of the reasons why I like Steve's book so much, is that he went through that long process as well. You know, he got it, but he didn't get it. And it took him a long time before. I mean, it did take a long time before the pain finally went away. And he shows how that works. I actually...
Jay?
Sorry?
Go ahead, Forrest.
Earlier today? It was yesterday. Yesterday, do you know who I spent an hour and 45 minutes chatting with in his home?
Who's that, buddy?
Mark Sofer.
Mark.
I met with Dr. Sofer, chatted with him for an hour and 45 minutes, and super nice guy. But he said that he might be writing another book, and that's actually something that he's going to focus on. Is more stories of people with slow recoveries, because that's what people need to hear and know that this is the way that it goes, and that you know, sometimes it does take a while. You know, these aspects of your unconscious are deeply entrenched. It's going to take a long time to unlearn what you learned, and along the way you figure out what works for you.
Yes. Makes sense.
Is that Jay? You had said you had a good report, right? That you was doing a little bit better this week.
Doing
a little better.
Yeah, I am.
Would you tell us the story?
Doing
tell us the story, because you just started here on the discussion group 3 weeks ago, and you told me that you was in so much pain you couldn't stand it. So tell me the story.
Well, it started this exacerbation. I've been through this before, and I healed from TMS and the problem some 15 years ago just by reading the books. But here a couple of months ago when I turned 70, the day before I was turned 70, I had back spasms galore. And I just came down with it. Another real bad case. I got scared. I was full of fear and depressed, and just that's what I've been going through. And then I ordered a lot more of TMS material. I ordered this book, The Great Pain Deception, and I've been reading that. And I've caught my back in the act of moving around, moving from the mid-back to the low back, and when it moves from one place into one place, the other place doesn't bother me, and vice versa. It's been in the last 3 days. It's been doing a lot of that, and so I've caught it. I've been catching it in the act, and I've been really getting a lot out of Steve's book, showing that when he says you just got to do it. You just have to get back into the physical to show this thing, because that's the power. for me, the power of the fear of debilitation is worse than the pain itself. And if I can fight my way back into the physical well-being, doing things, living life completely and fully again, then that, for me, will have robbed TMS of its purpose. And it'll go away. It'll leave me alone.
That's awesome.
That's where I am right now.
This is Joan. I just want to ask all of you, is it all back pain that you suffered, everyone?
I had overall body pain. Mine was like from the upper back all the way down to my ankles. Mm-hmm. I was completely bedridden, which I think every one of us had it pretty bad, a lot more than just back pain. We speak about back pain because a lot of times that was where it centered in, but it moves around, you know, the shoulder, the knee, the back, the neck. It moves around.
Okay.
I think it's like
Dr. Garner says
that a catastrophic back attack is the worst pain in clinical medicine. It's
right.
Well, I can say that mine is in my lower lumbar region. I have sciatica in my left leg. But when I had it, when I had a major back attack, it was like a surging electrical circuit through my whole body. That's when that whole idea of just laying in bed and letting it move around or trying to find a place where it isn't going to attack you, that's like the worst phase of it. I can't even remember that part, but I know it happened.
It's amazing how quick the brain will drop the pain. It's so bad and so horrible. When we get over this thing, we forget about that stuff quick.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like combat.
For me, it was repetitive strain injuries in my hands, my thumbs, my shoulders, neck. Upper center back, but not really classic back pain.
Yes.
And facial pain syndrome and knee pain. Yes.
Hello, femoral. I've had it all over my back. Being bedridden.
Forrest, I'm going to
40 years ago, I sat in a car for a whole year because of the orthopedic design of the seat. I thought that was the least hurtful area I could find to sit in. I sat in a car 4 seasons. Well, I came in to sleep at night and take a shower, and then I got back in the car all day long for a year. Mm-hmm. That was 40 years ago.
Mine forced.
I'd love to draw a connection between something that Jay said and something that Mouse Mom said. Jay was talking about how you just got to get out there and live your life. And because then you rob the TMS of its function. Like it's moot. Its job is to distract you. Its job is to hold your attention. And one of my favorite sections from Dr. Sarno is in Mind Body Prescription, where he talks about sometimes the disability is as important to the distraction, or more important to the distraction than the pain is. Because that's what our attention fixates on. And I kind of wonder if, for Mouse Mom, one of the issues that you're having is that just this decision that you have to make is causing you to fixate on that. That's how the distraction of TMS is happening. And I wonder if you might be able to... Does that resonate with you at all, Mouse Mom?
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell it's tormenting me.
Yeah, yeah, don't you think there's a Mouse Mom?
What was that?
Mouse Mom, don't you think there's an analogy between that holds between putting off having a steroid injection and an alcoholic putting off having a drink, or a junkie putting off taking a shot of heroin? I think there are a lot of analogies operating there about the way you're dealing with this sequence of steroid injections over 10 years. It's, what do they call that? Chronicity. Steve talks about that in this chapter 7. where things happen in a, they, people deny the chronicity because it comes and goes, but that is a form of chronicity itself. There's an addiction process involved, I think, with TMS. You get addicted to the cures, you get addicted to the rituals surrounding the cures, but what you're dealing with really are mental categories. The underlying problem of addiction, the psychological categories underpinning it. You can't let go of it. You perpetuate it that way.
Mm-hmm.
With the fixation.
That's wrong. And you know, pain has a powerful grip on our brain. And it's going to bring us back to wanting that placebo.
Yeah.
It's so weird because I had three boys and I had them all naturally and I was determined to do that way. You know, because I was like, I'm strong and I can accept the pain and didn't have epidurals during my births. And now I have some back pain and I'm screaming for an epidural. A little ironic.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's, you said Nicole.
What was that?
Tom, I think you faded out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You have a disconnection on Tom's part.
Yeah.
I think Tom, we lost Tom. Okay.
Yeah. Could I ask Donna something?
Yeah, go ahead, Joan.
Yeah, I just want to know how I could get in touch with Tennis Tom on the forum or the wiki. I don't know how to respond to that. Privately?
Oh, if anyone wants to get in touch with anyone,
right,
you can just send an email, just a normal old email, to Forrest, Forrest, Forrest@tmswiki.org. And I'll say
TMS?
T as in Tom, M as in Mike, S as in Sierra, tmswiki.org.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, guys. I think this has been a good discussion. What do y'all think?
That was very valuable. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, Joan. Well, I'm glad you got to talk, and Jay, I'm glad you got the talk. And gosh, it's been great having all y'all here tonight. We've got to speak about a lot of different scenarios and situations and placebos. So we're going to call it at that, okay? And I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording and we'll go to chapter 8 next week, okay, guys?
Herbie, Tom, one last thing. It got cut off.
Sorry about
but
that.
I was saying to Mouse Mom if she was familiar with Nicole Sachs, because Nicole Sachs has 5 kids, and maybe Mouse Mom should call Nicole up. She can do some phone consults. Because they might have a better rapport having, you know, the kids as an issue.
That's a great idea, Tennis Tom. Nicole Sachs is awesome. She is an awesome person.
I love her
book.
Yeah, I reached out to her and read her book. So we've been in contact a little bit. So thank you.
Great.
Good. Great. Good. Okay.
Thank you, Tennis Tom, for being here tonight, buddy. You're always full of all kind of knowledge and wisdom. We really appreciate it. Okay, I'm
going
to stop.
Thank you, Herbie.
Thank you, buddy. I'm going to stop the recording now.